Ford College. For complete information and a list of classes, please visit our website at hfcc.edu.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
Suspense.
It's the theater of the mind, whether your taste is comedy or mystery. We've got you totally covered here at WHFR. Check out Radio Vault Tuesdays from 10 in the morning till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Or if you like mysteries, and who doesn't, it's WHFR Sunday Night Mysteries from 9 o'clock until midnight on Sunday nights. It happens right here on the station making waves, 89.3 WHFR.FM.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
This is the WHFR Journal, and we have a special program for Labor Day selected just for you.
And she grabs the last ball, and boom, the clown drops into the water. Ted rushes the tank, yelling something in Dutch that seemed to require more phlegm than usual.
And if you make your way to the Big Ben Tunnel, there's a statue on the spot. It's been vandalized, pulled off its stand, and peppered with buckshot.
We're taking turns listening to what was hip and cool in 1996 on a cassette tape, no less.
I used to always joke with my mother that she was Barbie because she had a million different jobs.
I worked in radio for 5 years as a radio host for different programs, and therefore I had conversations with people every year about their expectations on that day.
It's time for The Apple Seed, filled with stories for you and your family. I'm Sam Payne, your host. It's such a pleasure to be with you today. A pleasure every time you tune in to bring these stories into your home and into your heart. And, of course, we always hope that the stories that we bring you here on the show spark memories for you that you can share with the people that you love. Today, it's an hour filled with stories about Labor Day and also about labor, good old-fashioned work. And as we begin, just a tiny bit of Labor Day history. It takes us all the way back to the end of the 19th century. In 1882, the citizens of New York, if they could get off work on a Monday, could watch the very first Labor Day parade. There were brass bands, members of labor unions marched, and as they marched, they carried signs that said things like, agitate, educate, organize, or 8 hours to constitute a day's work, or abolish convict labor, or labor creates all wealth, labor pays all taxes. And carrying those signs, the marchers marched. Afterward, there were picnics and speeches, and the idea was that the labor unions that participated in the festivities could sell tickets as a fundraiser. And the notion was that the first Monday in September was a great day for it, partly because of the weather, and partly, well, because it was a day more or less midway between the 4th of July and Thanksgiving, evenly spacing those holidays out, so everything doesn't come all at once. It was something they hoped would catch on. It didn't take long to catch on. In 1894, just 2 years after that first parade, Labor Day was a national holiday. Well, these days, Labor Day seems to be more about a break from labor, the last barbecue or beach trip of the summer, than a celebration of the American laborer. In this hour of the Appleseed, you'll hear stories about the barbecues and beaches side of Labor Day, but also stories that, as we mentioned, celebrate good old-fashioned work. From Pennsylvania storyteller Charlotte Blake Alston, you'll hear one of the most famous of all American work stories, the story of John Henry, the steel-driving man who went up against a steam steam drill and died with a hammer in his hand. It'll be told in Charlotte's terrific musical rhyming style, and it's coming up. You'll also hear a story from the great Minnesota storyteller Kevin Kling about visiting the state fair, a tradition that for so many signifies a celebration at summer's end. You'll hear from cowboy poet Joe Harrington. He's going to bring you a poem about taking pride in doing well the work that you do. And we'll even hear another American work story about the building of a tunnel in the 1920s through a solid mile of solid rock. But first, some Labor Day fun. We asked members of the Appleseed team to share Labor Day memories with us, and we'll bring you a couple of those memories during the hour, including this one from our producer, Jeff Simpson. Here's Jeff.
When I think of Labor Day's past, what I think of, besides the fact that we get a day off almost immediately after summer break, is the Labor Day party during my eighth grade year at South Junior High School, when my fellow drama geeks and I headed over to Corona Del Mar Beach for a bonfire. And on the way over there, some friends and I were sitting in the back of a pickup truck. We're taking turns listening to what was hip and cool in 1996, which was, of course, the album Bad Hair Day by Weird Al Yankovic, on a cassette tape, no less. For what it's worth, I still really, really like Weird Al to this day. So we get to the beach before sundown, and really the only thing I remember after that is a little encounter I had with a girl named Katie. I couldn't tell you what other friends were there, what we did, or what we ate. Katie was the cutest girl I had ever seen, which is pretty funny because I was only 13 at the time, so girls hadn't really been on my radar all that long. She was a little shorter than me. She had short, light brown hair, braces with a little gap in her front teeth, and she was sporting an oversized sweatshirt. Now, I'd never met her before, but quickly learned that night that she had a couple of older siblings, and one of them, I found out later, had actually dated my older brother. So, I had an in with Katie. Plus, aside from our love of theater, we were both the youngest in our families. So, as you can imagine, we had a lot to talk about. Other than that, I have no recollection of what we talked about or how I acted around her that night. Although I'm pretty sure I worked really hard to play it cool. And it's entirely possible that I tried to impress her by letting her listen to some Weird Al. Guys, if you want to know how to win over a girl, Weird Al. Two words. But I do remember when her ride showed up. I was crushed when she had to go. And as I watched her parents drive off with her, I very distinctly remember thinking, there she goes. That's the girl. That's the girl I'm going to crush on all through junior high and high school. And I was true to my word. And while she never liked me as much as I liked her, back then we would have said, like. I still think the kids use that phrase today. We did remain really good friends. And over the next 4 years, we went to movies all the time. We sang in the same jazz choir. We acted in the same plays. And Katie's the girl that I took to prom. There is a whole other story behind that. And it all started around Labor Day of 1996. Labor Day, thank you for the memories.
Jeff Simpson with a Labor Day memory with just about all the right components. End of summer fun, a little celebratory music, and a little young romance, too. Just as the edge is coming off of summer's heat, just as the nights are beginning to get a little longer, a little cooler, just as thoughts turn to going back to school, whatever form that might take, in most years, The state fair looms large. I remember a trip to the state fair being the very first field trip of each elementary school year that started before Labor Day. And as an adult, a trip to the state fair has always brought back some of those kid memories. This story from Minnesota storyteller Kevin Kling does the same thing. It's filled with details that will bring on end-of-summer state fair memories for you. Here's State Fair by Kevin Kling on the Appleseed.
Okay, it all started when my wife tells me her cousin Ted is arriving from Holland. She found him on the internet. I didn't even know she had a cousin on the internet. So we pick him up from the airport, and he's got this pamphlet called Why Americans Act That Way. And it's this list of habits that Americans have that most of the other countries do not share. Okay, one was Americans believe change is good. I go, yeah, of course change is good. But Ted says, no. In most of the rest of the world, change could mean a revolution or a coup or a flood. Come on, Ted. Another one was, Americans don't believe in fate. My wife asks, what, like a palm reader? No, he says, more like there's a plan already in action that we're just playing out. I mean, that's crazy, right? Why get up in the morning? Why watch football? So I say, come on, Ted, we're going to the state fair. And the three of us load up and head to St. Paul. Now, a mile out, it is a regular madhouse. Thousands of people from all over the state. Ted says, look, there's a parking place. It's only $5. My wife goes, don't waste your breath, Ted. At the fair, you park on the street. It's tradition, which is true. And only after about an hour of driving around, there it is, a beauty. I'm sort of in front of a fire hydrant and blocking a driveway, but it's not bad, and it's only about a mile from the fair. At the main entrance, a statue of Goldie the Gopher welcomes everybody. This huge, powerful fiberglass gopher with bulging biceps and a patronly buck-toothed grin. I mean, what a better representative. But Ted says, a gopher, this is a rodent, a vermin. Cows break their legs into holes. Your farmers tried to poison him. Huh? We love Goldie. I mean, I never questioned Goldie. Oh, but then it gets worse, way worse. We get inside, and we're met with a sea of our people and the smell of grease, you know, the reason we look the way we do. The wife and I are both wearing our I'm with stupid T-shirts, like I'm her brother from another mother, or she is my sister from another mister, and I got a plenty of Pepto-Bismol in case we eat something. Okay, I got this day all planned out. First, we go to Machinery Hill and look at all the farm implements. Ted says his farm back home dates back to William the Conqueror. I go, oh, yeah, Ted, well, some of our farms go back over 150 years. I say, come on, Ted, how about we watch a calf being born and then grab a bite to eat? So we head toward the birthing barn. Ted says, you know, I think some things should be done in private. Okay, so we hit the food building. The whole time, Ted's saying, you call this beer, you call this cheese, you call this sausage. Finally, my wife goes off on him. Okay, look at Ted. It's not a sausage. It's a hot dog. Say it. Hot dog. And this kind of beer is designed for after mowing the lawn, so it goes down fast. And these are cheese curds. They should squeak on your teeth when you bite them. Ted says, we age our cheese to perfection. She says, well, the perfect age for this cheese is about 20 minutes. Let's get some corn. Ted says, corn? We feed that to our pigs. She says, give it a try. I gotta agree with my wife on this one. I don't know what their schools teach them over there, but I think it would be good for more Europeans to travel. You know, learn what the world is really like. Next, we head to the cow barn, and we watch a woman sculpt the dairy princess out of butter. And then we see the crop art, pictures made out of seeds. The top of the Sistine Chapel has God's finger as a pumpkin seed. Now, this is a kind of art I can understand. I mean, I don't know what I like, but I know it's art. Then after that, we see the world's largest hog. My wife states, that fella's got some bragging rights. And she's right. Then after that, the sheep. Now, this is her favorite. The sheep enter the arena all wearing Norwegian sweaters. See, they take the wool from the sheep, and then they knit it back into Norwegian sweaters. I mean, it's genius. The crowd goes insane, you know, on the inside. Okay, now is when everything goes to H-E double hockey sticks. We go into the midway. Junior high kids running around free of their parents. It's like where Pinocchio ends up just before turning into a donkey. And then we hear it, a voice. Hey, hey, you. Everything in me says, don't turn, don't turn. I turn, and there he sits, the dunking clown. Now, the dunking clown is a man perched on a small platform over a tank of water. The object is to throw a ball at the target that drops the clown into the water, water that appears far from hygienic. Now, his job is to insult and enrage you into buying three balls for a dollar. And I remember this guy when I was a kid. He's been doing this forever. His arsenal of insults knows no limit. I mean, he could get Gandhi to throw a ball. The clown sees Ted. Hey, you. Ted's politeness gets the best of him. Yeah, says Ted, what is it you want? What's the matter? Don't you like me? Ted says, I like you just fine. Are you a Kraut? I am from Holland. We pulled your butt out of the war. Ted says, you should not speak. Oh, I'll speak. What we don't know is this guy is wearing the face paint of a traditional European clown that's never supposed to speak. For Ted, this has gone beyond endurable limits. He buys three balls. The clown starts singing Lily Marlene. Then the clown turns on me. He points to my wife. Hey, is that your twin brother? I buy three balls. I threw two of them, but I missed. My wife tells me later I was thrown at his head. Then she grabs the last ball and boom, the clown drops into the water. Ted rushes the tank yelling something in Dutch that seemed to require more phlegm than usual. That's when I thought I heard something snap in Ted. He walked calmly out of the midway. He ate corn. He paid a dollar to have a guy guess his weight. For a while, he slept on a bench in front of the talent tent, snoozing away, mustard-stained shirt, with his free yardstick between his knees. He looked like a happy Dutchman on a stick. I was so proud, holding that corn dog with that blank expression on his face. He looked like a Minnesotan. I snuck off and I tried to find a I'm with Stupid t-shirt to give him next year if he comes with us. As the sun set on the International Bazaar, romance was in the air. We passed by the talent tent and heard a group of junior high kids singing Wasting Away Again in Margaritaville. And when we passed the old mill, my wife says, why don't you ever say you love me? I said, I told you on the day we got married, and if anything changes, I'll let you know. She sighs and takes my arm. You're so romantic. Yeah, I suppose. On the way out, I stopped and got an extra dozen corn dogs. You know, they freeze up so nice. We got Ted in the car and took him back home, put him straight to bed. You know, that was a lot for one guy. But you know what? That night, I found that Why Americans Act That Way pamphlet in the garbage. Later on that night, I snuck down to the kitchen, and there was my wife already eating up a corn dog out of the microwave. We sat and enjoyed our corn dogs in silence, letting the memories of the day wash over us. The perfect end to the perfect day.
State Fair by Kevin Kling, about a visit to the Minnesota State Fair. And as we mentioned at the top of the hour, we asked our Appleseed family to share some thoughts and memories about Labor Day and about labor. Here's assistant producer Alyssa Mingurance with a little bit of a tribute to one of the work exemplars in her life, her mom. Here's Alyssa on the Appleseed.
I used to always joke with my mother that she was Barbie because she had a million different jobs. I remember her telling me about when she was 16 and worked on my grandfather's well drilling rig. She wore sturdy overalls, a thick hard hat, and would be covered head to toe in a layer of mud. In fact, the other workers on the rig were shocked when they discovered that my mom was a girl because she had always been covered in mud. Then, once they found out, they would try to prevent her from doing the harder or the more dirty jobs. But my mom wouldn't have any of that and continued to be one of the best workers on the rig. Hearing about that job taught me that even though some people will underestimate girls, we're just as capable as anyone else. I also remember when my mom talked to me about when she was in college and worked at a Wendy's. But when she talks about those days, she doesn't talk a lot about the wiping down tables or taking orders. Rather, she talks about her roommate and her eventual best friend who worked there with her and the silly things they did to tease each other and, you know, laugh over during their shifts. It made me see that sometimes a great job isn't so much about what you're doing, it's about who you're with. I even remember when my mom started to teach voice lessons. She told me that when she had first started, she felt massively inadequate. She had always considered herself to be the least musically talented in her family and had very minimal professional training growing up. But she felt that teaching voice was the right move for herself and her family, so she dove in headfirst and began to learn everything she could about music and the voice. Fast forward over 20 years later, and she is now the owner of her own voice studio, a board member for the Pan American Vocology Association, co-owner of the College Audition Project, head of Vocology and Practice's Musical Theater Tract, and so much more. She travels all over the world from LA to Ireland to learn and teach what she knows about music and the voice. All of this while simply being highly respected and beloved by her vocal community and her students. Hearing about my mother's journey showed me how we all have this hidden potential inside of us that's just waiting to be unlocked and bloom into countless blessings, both for ourselves and for those around us. And I think that's why we celebrate Labor Day, because every job has something to teach us, whether it's drilling wells, serving fast food, or teaching voice. The hours spent at our jobs assist in crafting us into who we are. So when we celebrate Labor Day today, I hope we don't forget to reflect and give gratitude to the lessons learned through all these hours of refining labor.
Assistant producer Alyssa Mingurance, with a memory of one of the work exemplars in her life, her mom. We're going to be back in a moment with one of the most famous work stories in American folklore, Charlotte Blake Alston's Hammers of Steel Rang Out, coming up in a moment on The Appleseed. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed.
The Henry Ford College Learning Lab is your central location for academic support. They strive to assist students and faculty with techniques that are evidence-based and will increase your academic success. The Learning Lab offers in-person and online services to help you succeed. They offer tutorial assistance provided by faculty, professional, and student tutors, one-on-one academic assistance, including strategies for improving test-taking and studying, workshops and presentations to classes or groups on strategies for learning success, study groups and review sessions on a variety of subjects, hands-on learning resources such as anatomical models in our bone room, computers, printing, copying, and scanning. For more information, please visit hfcc.edu/learnlab.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Sterling, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now's the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
I'm trying to use the phone!
Hey, loyal listener, call WHFR at 313-845-9676 or toll free at 1-800-585-HFCC, extension 9676.
What? Hear that last part.
That's 845-9676 or toll free 1-800-585-HFCC, extension 9676.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us on today's episode of The Appleseed. We're talking about Labor Day today, and that means end of summer memories and also thoughts about labor, good old-fashioned work. Before the break, you heard a quick story of Labor Day romance from our producer, Jeff Simpson, and a memory from Alyssa Mingurance about her mother. And, of course, you heard from Kevin Kling with a story about family coming together around a trip to the state fair. In a moment, you'll hear one of the most famous work stories in in American folklore, the story of John Henry, the steel-driving man. But first, assistant producer Karanina Munyu shares memories not of Labor Day, but of International Workers' Day, the Labor Day equivalent in so many countries, including Kenya, where Karani grew up and worked as a radio host for years before he became part of the Appleseed family. As you'll hear, International Workers' Day was about more than barbecues and trips to the beach, though there was some of that, too. It was about fighting for better wages and working conditions, and as a radio host, sometimes Karani found himself right in the middle of the conversation. Here's Karanina Munyu on the Appleseed.
Labor Day, also known as International Workers' Day, is a day that is marked on May 1st every year in my country, Kenya, East Africa. I say marked and not celebrated for a reason. I'm going to tell you about that in a bit. But first of all, as we mark this day here in the U.S., it brings back memories of my time back in my country, Kenya. I worked in radio for 5 years as a radio host for different programs, and therefore, I had conversations with people every year about their expectations on that day. There were a lot of these expectations from people because the umbrella body for workers and government officials addressed the country in a highly attended event, which is always held in an open historical ground. Thousands of Kenyans attend in the capital city, Nairobi. During this event, people wait anxiously to hear whether there will be a minimum wage increment or not. Before that day, there are always dramatic events going on. Companies lobby the government not to increase the wage, citing economic implications on the company's ability to employ more people. On the other hand, the workers' representatives advocate for an increase in the minimum wage. The outcome of that lobbying is not known until that day when the government representative addresses the people. I remember times when no increment was announced and people decided to walk out of the meeting in protest before the government representative finished his address. So it's always a very charged event. On the other hand, I lived in Mombasa, the second largest city which borders the Indian Ocean. Here, people will take some time off to head to the beautiful white sandy beaches to relax. That is where I'd all also head after my program on radio ends, always. At the beach, we would swim, play beach soccer, ride on camels, and sand bath. Therefore, you can see Labor Day is not just about celebrating of workers and biting pieces of barbecue. It's a movement which continuously fights for better wages and working conditions. Those are Labor Day memories from Kenya. Happy Labor Day, my American brothers and sisters.
Karani Namunyu with memories of International Workers' Day from Kenya, where he grew up. Up next, one of the most famous work stories in American folklore, the story of John Henry, the steel-driving man, shared with you by Appleseed favorite Pennsylvania storyteller Charlotte Blake Alston. Here's Charlotte on the Appleseed.
Hammers of steel rang out. 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 Well, he was born in Missouri in the 1840s. Others say that Alabama was the place. Other folks say one number Louisiana man or the man North Carolinians embrace. They also say that he was born with a hammer in his hand. That's how the legend goes. I can't imagine how his mama endured that pain, so I'll spare you the birthing woes. They say the frog stopped frogging and the cricket stopped cricking and the mighty wind quieted down. All of nature was a-watching and a-waiting and a-listening for that little bitty baby sound. And as soon as baby John drew his first breath, the river began to roar. Baby John jumped down, started crawling around, banging his hammer on the cabin floor. Come on. Hammers of steel rang out. Hammers of steel rang out. Hammers of steel rang out. Hammers of steel rang out.
Well, Lord have mercy, Mama cried. I'm not one to usually complain, but I want you to know that it feels like I just gave birth to a full-grown man. Well, he wasn't quite a man, but he certainly grew to be a big, tall, strapping boy. And plowing, planting, hauling, lifting was the kind of work he enjoyed. Now, legend says one day as a little bitty boy, when he was sitting on his dad's knee, that he pointed his finger at a great piece of steel and said, "That steel's going to be the death of me." Well, he started getting bored with farm-type work. He had an itching to travel the land, so he went to find work that would make better use of the strength that he had in his hands. Come on. Hammers of steel rang out. 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 Well, he got a job working on a river boat, and that suited his fancy just fine. And soon his story was being told all up and down the riverboat line. Well, one dark night, one stormy night, the riverboat paddle wheel broke. "We're taking on water," the captain said. "We have to bail to stay afloat." Well, young John Henry jumped on the deck, eased across a wooden plank. And before you could say, "Great God from Zion," he jumped down onto the paddle wheel crank. Well, he pushed, pulled, moaned and groaned, and the big wheel started to turn. John Henry pushed that riverboat back into port by the crack of dawn. Come on! Hammers of steel rang out. 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 Well, after spending some time on the riverboat, he was yearning for a bigger test. He heard men talking about railroad tracks being laid from the east to the west. They're laying track across prairies, rivers, plains, going to blast through the mountain's core. John Henry got excited, said to himself, "This is the challenge I've been waiting for." They needed men of strength to wield 10-pound hammers to drive those steel spikes through so the powder men could put in the dynamite, blast it, and cart away the residue. Well, they reached the big mountain, and that was the place where Big John's true test began. But all he was thinking was, "It feels so good to have a hammer in my hands again." Come on. Hammers of steel rang out. 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 Well, the men start singing and the hammers start ringing, and they swung those hammers all day. Each crew worked hard and fast as they could, but John Steel Gang led the way. Nobody'd ever seen such a man like John. He did the job of 10 strong men. And from the owner to the foreman to the water boy, everybody was in awe of him. But one day, a man showed up, told the boss, "I can save you time. This brand new steam, you can do the work of all the hammers on the steel gang line." Well, John spoke up, "I don't know about that, but these are good, hard-working men. They've laid track for you all across the land, and they'll be loyal until the end. No matter how hard-working they might be, there's no man who can beat a machine. And I dare anybody to challenge the thought that he can beat a drill powered by steam." See, this here man didn't know John Henry, didn't know about the steamboat wheel. And there was nobody better than Big John Henry at swinging those hammers of steel. So John said, "I'll take the challenge, for all these men have laid track all across this land. 'Cause before I let my steel gang down, I'll die with a hammer in my hand." Come on. Hammers of steel rang out. 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 So the stage was set. The Big Bend Tunnel was the site of the big showdown. And one look in John's eye and you knew he was not gonna let that steel gang down. "Come on, Lil Bill, grab them steel spikes. You and me's got work to do." Bill shook John's hand and said, "There's nobody that I'd rather do this with than you." It was on John's back that the jobs of all these hard-working men would ride. So he calmed his mind and prepared to hammer into the belly of the mountainside. Lil Bill grabbed one of the handheld drills, placed it against the rock. John Henry picked up a 10-pound maul and prepared to race the clock. The men stepped back to watch. There was so much tension in the air. You could cut the thickness with a knife and still have more than your share. Come on. Hammers of steel rang out. 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 So they got into position, side by side, the steam drill and the man. Bill heaved a sigh, tightened his grip, steadied the steel spike with his hands. The foreman called out number one. The operator's hand started to twitch. The foreman called out number two. The nervous hand went onto the switch. Foreman dropped his hands on three, and the steam drill roared to life. But the first hit they heard was steel on steel. John Henry had made the first strike. Come on! Hammers of steel rang out. 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 Chicka, 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 pop, 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 pop. The steam drill chugged and churned. And shovel after shovel after shovel of coal, that steam drill quickly burned. And John Henry was slamming that spike so hard and fast that it got red hot. Lil Bill had to drop it, but he picked up another. John Henry kept up the fight. I need a 20-pound hammer. Give it to me quick. He tossed the 10-pound hammer away. And the sound of steel on steel echoed all through the mountains and the canyons that day. But swinging one hammer wasn't good enough. Give me a second one, the big man cried. He started swinging both hammers so fast the Jew could barely see it with the naked eye. They poured water on the steam drill to cool it down as man and machine kept pace, drilling deeper and deeper until the stone cold rock. It wasn't clear who was winning the race. Come on! Hammers of steel rang out. 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 But John kept going, swinging both of his arms until everybody could see that where Big John Henry had drilled 5 feet, the steam drill had only dug three. Ha! 6 feet, 8 feet, 10 feet. John was out drilling the drilling machine. And when the steam drill reached the 9-foot mark, John Henry had reached 14. Pour water, shovel in more coal. We can't stop drilling now. But the machine couldn't keep up with Big John's pace. It seemed to be slowing down. All of a sudden, the steam drill started shaking. It sputtered, then it came to a halt. The machine overheated, stopped dead cold. The thing had started falling apart. Yeah! Woo-hoo! The man started shouting, he did it, he beat that thing. The two holes he drilled totaled 14 feet, the machine couldn't manage 10. Come on! Hammers of steel rang out. 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 Well, John stopped swinging, and all of a sudden, a beam of light shone in his eyes. He'd hammered his way through the last bit of rock and broken through to the other side. But as John stepped out into the light, drew in a slow, deep breath, his body gave out. He collapsed to the ground, just the way he predicted his death. Both men and drill were silent. The hammers no longer rang, but the rhythm of the strikes could be felt in the hearts of every member of John's steel gang. They say they carried John off the mountain and buried him in the sand. And people will come from the east and the west to visit the grave of this man. And if you make your way to the Big Bend Tunnel, there's a statue on the spot. It's been vandalized, put off its stand, and peppered with buckshot. But no buckshot will stop the stories and songs from being told throughout this land of Big John Henry, the steel-driving man who died with a hammer in his hand. Hammers of steel rang out. 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 John Henry, leader of the steel driving gang.
Hammers of steel rang out. Performed for you by Charlotte Blake Alston, one of the most famous American work stories, that is, and we're happy to bring it to you here on the Appleseed in an hour filled with stories about Labor Day and also labor, good old-fashioned work. We're going to take a quick break, but before we do, we want to bring you another work memory from a member of the Appleseed family. Here's assistant producer Trent Horton with a memory for anyone who has ever been rousted out of bed on a Saturday to pull weeds in the garden. Here's Trent on the Appleseed.
When I was younger, I used to dread Saturday mornings. It seems kind of counterintuitive because Saturday was when we were finally free from school. But I knew that come morning, my dad would have a special project lined up for us to complete before we could go about more important activities like playing Mario Kart, jumping on the trampoline. Whether it was shoveling gravel, weeding the garden, mowing the lawn, there was always something to do and I hated it. I remember hiding, complaining, yelling, and I did all sorts of things to try and escape. What I viewed then as hard labor seemed to have no point other than to make my life more difficult. Since then, I've experienced a few things that I consider to be a bit harder than weeding the garden for 2 hours. I realize now the value in what he had me and my brothers do those early mornings. Those days were stepping stones to what my dad knew we would face as we grew up and began to forge lives of our own. Contrary to my 11-year-old beliefs, we don't always get to rest when we want to, nor do we get to have fun whenever we have the desire. As it turns out, that would actually be pretty unfulfilling. There's nothing quite like rolling up your sleeves, buckling down, and getting something done. Accomplishing difficult tasks has given me real, lasting satisfaction that I haven't found anywhere else. Whenever Labor Day rolls around, I tend to think of my father and the work ethic he taught me, and still teaches me to this day. And I think of the billions of people who have lived and died working to make the world a better place.
Trent Horton, with a work memory of his dad in an hour of the Appleseed dedicated to stories about labor and Labor Day. Underneath Trent's story, you heard the noodling of Sam Carden on the piano. Sam and I wrote the Appleseed theme music together, and he can noodle with the best of them. Now, coming up, more memories and a cowboy poem from Joe Harrington about making your work a point of pride. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to the Appleseed.
25% of community college students report food insecurity and are going to bed hungry. Shocking, right? A friend sitting next to you in class could be going hungry and you'll never know. The good news, HFC is here to help. The Hawk's Nest has non-perishable food items available for students experiencing hunger. And you can help too. By donating non-perishable food items or money, you can be sure that 100% of your donation goes directly back into your college community. Donate today and fill a friend's plate. Go to hfcc.edu and search Hawk's Nest.
Do you want to make waves? Come join us at WHFR 89.3. WHFR is an award-winning, independent, non-commercial broadcast internet and radio station powered by over 50 student and volunteer staff members. WHFR provides classical 24 programming nightly and Mountain Stage weekly, while also airing weekly local public affairs and specialty talk programming. Come join us, making waves today.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us for this hour of The Appleseed, filled today with stories of labor and Labor Day. We've heard about trips to the beach and to the state fair from Jeff Simpson and Kevin Kling. We've heard stories about family work memories from Alyssa Mingurante and Trent Horton. We heard the story of John Henry from Charlotte Blake Alston. And in a moment, a cowboy poem from Joe Harrington about making your work a point of pride. But before we do, a Labor Day memory from assistant producer Jen Baker about a Labor Day tradition in her family, a tradition that has them slipping into a pair of running shoes and joining a few thousand of their closest friends in long-distance races. Here's Jen.
Memories that I have of Labor Day weekend are actually those of marathons and half marathons. When I was little until now, my dad yearly ran the Pocatello Half Marathon, which usually falls on Labor Day weekend. And so it was our tradition to go and to visit with my grandparents at their home near Pocatello and watch my dad run the race, spend time with my cousins, and have a good time together. We'd go to the famous Tasty Treat ice cream place and get our big tall ice cream cones, hang out as cousins. We called ourselves the Relative Rangers and just have a lot of fun. One year in particular, we actually broke tradition and my mom and I went to run the Disneyland half marathon. And this actually ended up being a pretty profound experience. As I was running and times would get, you know, kind of frustrated or be like, oh, where's the end? I would look out and I would see the lines of people that had volunteered from various organizations along the course, high school marching bands, different community cultural groups, all these people lining the streets of Anaheim as we're running through and cheering us on with songs or dances or signs or posters or calling out names that were printed on our race bibs. And This just filled me with so much hope that it honestly brought me to tears. And on this Labor Day weekend, as I'm running this Disneyland half marathon, I was just impressed by how many people are running alongside us in life. That there's good people placed in our lives, metaphorically and literally, in terms of this race. And it just filled me with profound gratitude for how people are on our side and there to support us and motivate us, even though we may not necessarily recognize it in the moment. When we pause our race, our literal race, our race of life, we can look up and see the faces of so many people here for us. And I hope that this Labor Day, we can all feel the support of other people around us in whatever challenges we may be facing. Hope you have a great Labor Day.
Jen Baker, one of our assistant producers, with a reminder that in the work you do in the world, you're often surrounded by help and encouragement. A Labor Day memory about long-distance racing. Now, up next, a cowboy poem from our friend Joe Harrington about the building of a fence. It's a poem that will remind you to make good work a point of pride in your life. In an hour of the Appleseed filled with stories, not just of Labor Day, but of labor, too, here's Joe Harrington with The Fence here on the Appleseed.
Me and Slim and Stumpy Stokes were on the trail one day when Stokes reined in and bent our ear with something he had to say. He pointed yonder with his chin, sighed long and spit at you. He leaned an elbow across the saddle and said, "That there must be new." I tracked his gaze across the plains where the grass was tall and good beneath the sky of azure blue to where a wire fence stood. The scene near took my breath away. To describe it, I had no words. The stream, the grass, and flowers, and there in flight were birds. But something in that stunning scene was wrong and out of place. Kinda like an ugly scar across a pretty face. But there it was, for all to see why Stumpy took offense. For there in all that beauty stood a crooked, ugly fence. It leaned a bit and twisted as it ambled out of sight, and the wire was loose and sagging on posts not put in right. Well, Stumpy took his hat off and he frowned like he's mad, but when he slapped it across his leg, I knew that this was bad. "We hired that crew from town," he growled, "'cause they had a better bid. They said they'd put us all to shame. Well, it sure looks like they did. They built that fence in half the time, and now they're on their way off to trash some other job, and of course, expect their pay." As Stumpy turned to ride away, he clenched his teeth in tight. "We'll have to tear it down," he said, "and come back and build it right." Well, he topped the ridge before I spoke, because I was in a state of shock. "What? Rebuild the fence?" I cried. "That hillside's most all rock. We'll dig holes for weeks," I said with a furrow in my brow. "And what's it matter anyway? That thing'll still hold cows." Then Slim glared at me in pure disgust. "That's selfish thinking, lad. Son, that fence, it shames the ranch. It makes us all look bad." Slim then jawed for half an hour about honor and taking pride, about the value of a handshake and what it means inside. He said, "I've seen it coming. These young, smart-aleck fools don't have a speck of honor or regard for decent rules. They see no need to do their best just 'cause they said they would. They got no use for honesty or doing right or good." Then he pointed west to another fence. It stood tight and straight and new. He said, "Now, we built that fence 6 years ago when Stumpy bossed the crew. He promised it by Christmas, and when Stumpy gave his word, nothing short of Judgment Day would change what we all heard. Sure, the work was hard, just like the ground from dawn till setting sun, but we finished like we said we would, and we're still proud of what we've done. Now, there it stands, all straight and tight. But it's more just a fence. It's a tribute to what we said we'd do and what we've all done since. It's a lesson, son, you gotta learn before you can be a man. You give your best to all you do, and on your word you stand. So when Stumpy says we'll tear it down, well, you just take it like a man. And when we put it up again, you do the best you can. Then someday, you'll ride up here with some other wet-nosed kid. And when he asks you why it matters, well, you can show him what you did.
Cowboy poet Joe Harrington with The Fence here on the Appleseed. In a moment, another American work story about the building of a tunnel through a mile of solid rock in the 1920s. But first, a memory filled with family attitudes about work from assistant producer Isabo Ng. Happy to bring it to you here on the Appleseed.
Don't have any memories directly associated with Labor Day because I come from a Chinese American family, and the joke amongst my people is that we don't close up shop for anything. There's a reason Ralphie's family goes to a Chinese restaurant for Christmas dinner in that movie A Christmas Story. So when Labor Day comes along and calls all the workers to cease their labors, you can bet my dad's Chinese restaurant will still be up and running, having forgotten the holiday even exists. But that thought is delightful to me because I grew up seeing how thankful my Chinese American family is to be employed here in America at all, to have the blessing of work that is supported by a community and is thus able to put food on our family's table. And that gratitude is best expressed in a moment I had with my Ying Yen, my grandmother, years ago. I pulled out the lotion and started rolling up Ying Yen's pant legs so that I could massage her calves when I heard her start to weep. "Why sad?" I asked. She mustered up her best English. "You work too hard." She shook her head and wept a bit louder. "Hurt my heart." She patted her chest. Her frail body shook with this sorrow, and my heart broke. This woman came to America years ago to make a better life for her family, one where the children could focus on a good education instead of work. And she herself grew up in rice fields of southern mainland China, and she spent so many days unsure of whether or not food would be on her table that night. There even came a point where she and her family had such little income that her parents sold her sister off, only for her to trek across southern mainland China and retrieve her sister to bring her back home. When Ying Yin's chance came to immigrate over to America, the place that the Chinese felt was so full of financial hope that they called it the Golden Mountain, she leapt at it. She came here and spent the rest of her days in the back kitchens of restaurants and always on her feet till she made enough money to bring her own family over here. And even when she was able to finance her children opening their own restaurants, she didn't retire. She kept working away at the stoves of her own family businesses. I looked down at Ying-Yen's aching legs. Years of trudging through rice paddies, trekking across southern mainland China, and standing before stovetops showed in her wrinkles and bruised legs. Every time I rubbed them, she groaned. She'd even tried to sneak out and mow the lawn for me earlier that day, and I'd heard the mower start and rushed outside to usher the 83-year-old woman back in. And she told me that I worked too hard. My grandmother is the reason I'm so blessed to have an education. The strongest morals, the resilient work ethic, and the employment to help put food on my family's table. And all of that is because she brought my family here to America. We don't cease to work on Labor Day because we consider it a miracle that this country gave our family jobs to work at all. I'm so thankful. And perhaps my way of celebrating Labor Day is also by participating in a little bit of the work that my family is blessed to have.
Isabo
Isabo Ng, one of our assistant producers, with a memory filled with family attitudes about work and also with a spirit of gratitude. We're going to wrap up this hour of the Appleseed, an hour filled with stories about Labor Day and also about labor, good old-fashioned work, with a little work song. It was written to honor the workers on the Zion-Mount Carmel Tunnel, built to provide greater access and shorter routes for tourists trying to hit all the big Western national parks back in the 1920s. The tunnel cuts along the edge of Zion National Park in southern Utah, and it was built right on the cusp of the Depression during the 3 years between 1927 and 1930. An army of contractors, miners, demolitions experts, engineers, and laborers of all kinds, all working for the Nevada Construction Company, congregated like ants on the cliffs along the canyon's south edge, and they cut 3 miles of switchbacks up the steep mountainside, right up to solid rock, and through that rock they went, cutting a tunnel more than a mile long to what would become the canyon's east entrance. Cutting that tunnel was a bit noisy, and it was dangerous enough that 2 workers died on the project, but it was good, honest work for good, honest pay, and men lined up. They were in it, most of them, for the gig, for the paycheck. Here are me and some of my pals, Ryan Tilby, Steve Lemon, and Nick Chamberlain, with a song about work, written about the guys who worked on that tunnel.
To my baby back home. These times are hard now, getting harder, and I'm a long, long way from my home. And just the zigzagging up of this mountainside is all that is between me here and being all alone. This guitar. Punch a hole right in the middle of this stone, and it's a long mile through. So down I go. Let me come out the other side, a blinking in the sun. This hole done took 2 of my brothers. One under a rock, and one from breathing in the one thought keeps coming round. I got to give and get gone before it gets me gone too. I'm going down, down, down,
down, down, down.
In the dark, dark, dark,
dark, dark, dark.
I'm going down, down, down,
down, down, down.
The things I do, the things I do when these old hands. A shovel in my hand, I'll dig up all the sand so I can send a little something to my baby, my baby, my ever-loving baby.
For fun, a work song performed by my friends Ryan Tilby, Steve Lemon, Nick Chamberlain, and me. In an hour of the Appleseed dedicated to stories about Labor Day and about labor, too. It's been an hour of beach picnics, young romance, lessons about work ethic, American folklore, and gratefulness that we have the work at all. I'm Sam Payne. The producer of the Appleseed is Jeff Simpson. Our audio engineer is Stuart Foster. Find us online at byuradio.org/Appleseed or Google the Appleseed Podcast. From all of us here at the Appleseed, happy Labor Day, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us for an hour of stories, music, and conversation made for you and your family and brought to you by the Appleseed. The show is a production of BYU Radio. We'll see you next time.
This has been a special Labor Day presentation on the WHFR Journal. Join us for the WHFR Journal each and every Friday at 1 o'clock here on the station making waves, WHFR 89.3 and WHFR.FM. Stay tuned for Highway 61 with Kitty Love.
Considering a career as a social worker, mental health technician, or counselor? If so, check out the Social Work and Counseling Technician program at Henry Ford College. You can earn your associate in applied science degree through HFC's School of Health and Human Services. For more information, contact our Learning Success Center at 313-845-9750. That's 313-845-9750.
WHFR.FM is your home for Super Dorky Radio every single Thursday from 8 to 11 on The Jump Button. Tune in to hear music from video games, cartoons, anime, and more every Thursday from 8 to 11 p.m. only here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
South of Memphis, Tennessee.